you really like where you're sitting, if you're sitting anywhere but the front row, I would encourage you to come sit for the front row so we can actually be in a conversation. You can stay in the back if you need to, but if you're willing to come forward and fill in the front row, I'd be better.
No.
I had a cantor colleague. Cantor leads the music in the synagogue. And I'm sure you have the same thing in churches. Nobody likes to sit in the front, right? So he plays the guitar, and he says one time he went down, like, halfway down the aisle of the center of the synagogue row, started playing his guitar. And in the synagogue, we often are saying, please rise for this prayer or that. You guys tend to know when to rise, but we tell our people, please rise. So Cantor Charlotte, he went down, to, like, almost to the back or to the middle of the row, starts playing his guitar and the song. It says, please rise. Everybody listens. Please rise. Now follow me. Follow him to the front rows and sit in the front rows.
Oh, that's good.
I don't have a guitar, but follow me. So, because I would like this to, as much as possible, to be a conversation model. And I just sent around packets. Are these they not? Yeah. Who didn't get one yet? No, that's one you can take and leave. This is what we're doing. Genesis 22, it should say on it.
Thank you.
Okay. And just the packet back. Or maybe you can hang on to the extras for those that come in that side.
Put some on this side.
Yeah, we'll put a couple on this side. Or give me a couple. Give that couple for that side. You can use some
of
the folks that come in. And once again, I made 30 copies. If we have more than 30,
I can run and make you
some. Can run and make some. Should I do that right now? How many more do we need? I can't tell how many are.
Who does not have one yet?
Raise your hand if you'd like a copy.
I'll do about five.
Oh, there's two copies.
Oh, wait a minute. I need one.
Oh, here. The next one.
Okay.
I have one.
It says Genesis 22 on the bottom. You should have one that says Genesis 22. Okay, so I was asked, would I do a quick review of yesterday? Let me ask you, how many of you were here for Midrash 101? Actually, let's take that back. Put your hands down. How many of you were not here for 101? Okay, just a couple. So I'm going to do a really quick introduction because I really want to get to the text. Midrash is a creative way of reading scriptural text that gets kind of in and behind and underneath and around the text, placing the classical midrash that we read is the sages' interpretations of scripture, in a sense, getting inside the head of Abraham or getting inside the head of God to understand what lies underneath and behind the text. I think that's, and the classical midrash that we have, the manuscripts that have now been found, edited, published, translated, come from about the 2nd century of the Common Era through a classical midrash is through about the 10th century, 9th century. And then we have people today creating modern midrash, which, if there's time, we'll maybe do, but there may not be. But I have in the packet some examples. So as far as real basic introduction, that's all I'm going to give you, but there are leftovers of the explanation of what it is. If you didn't get one, you can raise your hand or pick one up on the way out. I am going to take a big risk, personally, risk of offending mostly, but to study this passage, Genesis 22, the binding of Isaac. And the reason it feels risky for me, and Nancy and I had some conversations about this, is the connection between the binding of Isaac, the offering, the call to sacrifice Isaac, and the actual sacrifice in Christianity of Jesus on the cross. The Midrashim I'm presenting here, the classical Midrash and the modern Midrash, all come from a Jewish perspective, and once again from Judaism 101, with all due respect of our Christian neighbors to whom Jesus is a really important, obviously, figure. In Judaism, we do not believe that Jesus is Son of God, Lord and Savior, or significant to our tradition, as Muhammad may not be significant to the Christian tradition. That said, we respect that Christians believe it, but Jews do not believe it. So just as background information, and I know I'm standing here, a rabbi among mostly Christians, so let's just keep that in mind. So these are Jewish texts responding to the story of the Binding of Isaac. Okay? We are going to read the biblical text together, but we are going to read it according to this guideline, how to read a source text midrashically, and then how to read the midrashic text. This is also from the last session, but we'll review it. So, we are going to, in a moment, read Genesis 22. It's in the packet, Hebrew and English. We're going to read it aloud. We're going to read it slowly, all the way through. And then we are going to, that's not the right one for right now. She's making more copies. Yeah. This is some extra text that you can take later, so I'm going to turn it over for now. We're going to read the text, then we're going to raise questions of the text, and this is the challenging part. We are going to ask questions of the text, and we are not going to answer them. We are going to forget everything we ever knew or thought about this text when we're asking the questions. We're going to read it as if we're Martians and we just came across it or something. I don't know, pick the metaphor. It's really hard. It's really hard to leave what you know, leave what you've inherited, outside the questioning process. But just open, bust your mind open, and ask any question that comes to mind. It can be a textual question. Why does the word, and we're reading in English, so we're reading in translation, but it's the text that we have, so we can ask questions of it. And I might say, well, the Hebrew doesn't read that way, but we can still play with it. Why is the word the there instead of the word in? Why? It can be that simple. Why is Abraham spelled this way instead of that way? Or it can be the big question, why would God do such a thing? So from the very smallest, why is that a capital T instead of a small T? I mean, that you wouldn't have in Hebrew because you don't have capital letters. But it's an example of the kinds of questions we can ask and everything in between. What was so-and-so thinking when this happened? Or why does the thing read this way? Textual question, theological question, narrative question. How come the story didn't go that direction? So any kind of questions, think broadly, think narrowly, think creatively. Okay? So as we're reading it out loud, I want you to also be percolating questions so that when we get to the questioning section, we can write down some questions. So try to keep them in your mind. You have a message for me.
Has Hannah come to find you?
No.
Okay, how many would you like in for each one?
And we'll get to those instructions. Okay? So, here we go. Genesis 22, the binding of Isaac. I'm going to suggest that we read aloud, just going around the circle. If you don't like reading aloud, just tell the person next to you to take your turn. Okay? Read slowly. Oftentimes, when we're invited to read text aloud, we zoom through it, and nobody can hear it. So we zoom. After these things, read really slowly, okay? Please. And you can read as much as you want. You can read a verse. You can read a paragraph. But let's get to the different ones. We're in the packet now.
After these things, God tested Abraham, saying to him, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. God said, Take your son, your only one, the one you love, Isaac, and go forth to the land of Moriah, offering there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I will show you.
Abraham rose early, saddled his donkey, chopped wood and covering, took Isaac his son and his two lads, and set out for the place that God had spoken of to him.
On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Abraham said to his servant lads, "Stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder. We will worship and return to you." Abraham then took the wood for the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. In his own hand he held the firestone and the knife. And the two of them went on together.
Isaac then said to Abraham his father,
"Father!"
He answered, "Here I am, my son." And Isaac said, "Here is the firestone and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?"
Abraham replied, "God will see to the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went on together.
They came to the place that God had shown him. There Abraham built the altar and arranged the wood and bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Abraham now reached out and took the knife to slay his son. But out of heaven, an angel of the Eternal called to him, saying, "Abraham, Abraham." He replied, "Here I am."
I'll pause for a minute. This translation translates Adonai, God, as the Eternal in an attempt to be non-gendered for God. So when it says the Eternal, it's referring to God. It's a translator choice.
The angel then said, "Do not lay your hand on the lad. Do nothing to him. For now I know that you are one who fears God, as you did not withhold your son, your only one, from me."
Abraham lifted his eyes. He now could see a ram just after it was caught by its horns in a thicket. Abraham went and took the ram and offered it as a burnt offering in place of his son. Abraham named that place
Adonai Yireh.
To this day, people say, "On the mount of the Eternal, God will be seen."
The Hebrew is, Abraham named that place Adonai Yireh, because, and in the future, people will say, "On this mountain, Adonai Yireh, God was seen or will be seen." So it's a pun, or it's a use of Adonai Yireh and Adonai Yireh together.
Then out of heaven, an angel of the Eternal called to Abraham a second time,
saying, "By myself I swear, says the Eternal One, that because you did this thing, you did not withhold your son, your only son."
Someone pick up.
"I will bless you greatly and make your descendants as numerous as the stars of heaven and the sands of the seashore. And your descendants shall take possession of the gates of their foes."
Nora?
18?
And through your descendants, the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you hearken to my voice.
Abraham then returned to his servant lads. They got up and traveled together to Beersheba, and Abraham settled in Beersheba.
Okay, now, let's turn back to the beginning, and I'm just going to invite you, do you have any questions on, we'll look at it visually, verses 1 and 2.
What are these things?
What are these things? Right, after what things, correct? I'm going to, might have to find some working pen. Not that one. Oh, good. Okay, next. call him out.
Tested.
Good. What does tested mean? I like that. A one-word question. Excellent. Questions, verses 1 and 2.
Why is God so repetitive in describing Abraham's son?
And it's verse 2, right?
Yeah.
Okay. One more for this 1 and 2. Yes.
Why does God refer to Isaac as his as Abraham's only son?
Okay, I'm going to write in shorthand. There might be more. Any urgent others from 1 and 2? Let's look at 3, 4, 5, and 6, just because that's the way it's separated out here.
Why did he bring two other people with him?
Another
3 days journey.
Oops, that's not how you spell days.
Why did Isaac carry the wood?
Yeah.
How did Abraham know that was the mountain?
Should we move to the next paragraphs?
Here?
Yeah.
What was he going to tell Sarah when he got home?
Ah, what about Sarah?
He's going to want to know.
Yeah. Very good.
Why does Abraham always say, "Here I am"?
Ah, here I am. That came up in our coffee break this morning. The word in Hebrew is hineni. Hineni, and that's a powerful word in Jewish thinking and scripture. Adam says hineni, God says hineni, means, I'm not supposed to answer, look at me, I'm missing my own directions. But when we got there, I thought of our conversation this morning, and I can talk more about hineni, but very good question, and look at me, I can't even follow my own directions. Others, 7 through 9, or anything up through 9? Nothing troubling or curious in that verse? That paragraph?
How did Abraham feel when he said, "God will see to the lamb"?
Why didn't his son in verse 9 protest?
Yeah.
I remember thinking that when I was a kid.
I'm going to broaden that out to what was Isaac feeling, yeah. Right? Why didn't he protest? That's what I mean by writing Isaac here. Why didn't he protest? What was he feeling? Good.
Or why didn't the author include Isaac's response?
Good. How shall I put that?
I'm assuming there was one.
Okay, why isn't it there? Good. Yes.
Did Isaac just forget to ask about the lamb earlier, or why did he not ask about the lamb earlier? Two questions.
Okay. Good. Yes.
trying to keep things secret, or did he actually know there would be a land?
So I have here what was Abraham feeling and thinking. I'll add on, just because we're on the next page. How about what did Abraham know? Did he know, or was he making it up? I'm going to say Abraham here, because there are a lot of questions about what's behind his answer. Is he making it up? Does he know? Is he lying? What's behind it? Is that accurate? And yes.
How does he know it's the right place?
Right. That's how does he know it's the mountain? Right.
At the beginning, it's I will show you.
Right.
And then it's God has shown him.
So
where's there's something missing?
Good. How does he know that the mountain he sees it and goes to is the right one? Good.
The angel in verse 11 calls Abraham twice, says his name twice, whereas God and Isaac only said his name once.
Very good.
Does that matter?
The angel calls twice. What's that about? Okay, excellent. Yeah.
And also, is there a reason that the angel talks to him instead of God talking
yeah.
to him?
Yeah. Yeah. Calls twice, and why not God? Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Why isn't God calling? Beautiful.
Actually.
I'm sorry?
Actually, the angel is one that says, don't need to do that.
Right. So the angel is doing all the communicating here.
Right.
Why isn't God communicating directly?
Right.
So it's calling twice, but in general, why is the angel talking? Good.
Did Isaac try to fight back when he was bound?
I think he's not.
Why didn't he fight back? Good. Or did he fight back? Good.
Verse 12.
12.
At the end, why is me capitalized?
I'm just going to answer that one because it's the English. In translations of scripture, whenever it's referring to God, we capitalize. So if it's you, we capitalize the Y. If it's and here, God is talking, presumably. So or this, I'll answer it differently. This translator is assuming that me means God here. And the Hebrew, we don't have any capitalization or anything. So it's a translator choice, but there's always good translator questions.
I don't mean to argue, but it appears to me the angel is talking.
Okay, so translator, who's talking, right?
Right.
Is that what you meant by why is it capitalized?
Yes.
Okay, misunderstood.
In any ways, why is the angel saying withholding from me?
Good. So if it's the angel, why is he saying withhold from me? If it's God, why doesn't it say God is talking? Good question. Okay, I misunderstood. Yes?
To fear God, does one need to sacrifice someone?
Wow. Fear God.
Does that include, yeah.
Is that equal sacrifice? Is that okay?
Sure.
Shorthand. My mother was a court reporter. She had to do this. Actually, she wouldn't be allowed to do that. She had to write it down exactly, but in short. Does fearing God require or equal sacrifice? Beautiful. You guys are really good at this. Are we on the second page?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
We're at 13.
Okay, 13.
Where
and
did
onward.
The ram come from?
I'm sorry?
Where did the ram come from?
Source of the ram. Good.
How did he know that ram is the thing that he should offer as a burnt offering?
Okay. How did Abe, no. And I'm just going to make an arrow to this.
So they were talking about a lamb, but now we have a ram.
Right? Mm-hmm. Lamb.
Which is different.
Versus that's ram.
Or Bill, the question, why does he know that it's the right thing to put up for bird up?
Yeah. I'm just going to check on the Hebrew for lamb versus ram. It's set in the beginning, and when he's found, what verses he found in the ram in the thicket? Here.
13.
Yeah, it's a different word. This is set, and this is aisle.
It could have been a squirrel or something.
I've never noticed that before. Thank you.
Why does Abraham decide it's necessary to make an offering of something other than his son?
Say that again.
So I continued to make the offering when the director from God was already...
Okay. Why doesn't Abraham just say, oh, good, we can go home now, instead of offering the lamb, right? Okay, I'm not going to write it down, but that's an excellent question. Too many words, and we're getting to the bottom of the page, but it's not reflecting on the question, because I want to move on. Any last couple questions for the end of the story or for the whole story in general?
Why did Isaac disappear?
Ah, what do you mean? How do you know Isaac disappeared?
He's not mentioned again.
Very good. Where's Isaac? Right? At the end of the story, if you look carefully, Abraham goes to Beersheba. Isaac is not mentioned. Where's Isaac?
Why does he go to Beersheba?
Why Beersheba? Okay.
In 15 and 16, once again, we have the angel retelling or bringing the message of God as opposed. So God talks directly to Abraham at the beginning to tell him what to do, and then at the end,
excellent.
The blessing is not from God's mouth.
Abraham doesn't respond at this point.
So in the beginning, God talks directly to Abraham. Right. Does Abraham respond in the beginning? Hineni, right? And in the end here, the angel talks on God's behalf, and Abraham does not respond, right? Excellent. I'm going to quit writing. You get the point, but let's keep raising a couple more. That's a wonderful, careful reading of the text. Why does God speak and Abraham speak in the beginning? In the end, an angel speaks, and Abraham doesn't speak at all. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Good. So, right, back again to our question, where's Sarah?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Let's do questions till 4:30, although it doesn't give us much time. Actually, no. Any big picture questions? Now, we have very wonderful textual questions. This is probably the best anyone's ever done that I've taught this to. Big picture questions. Andrew.
Why would I trust a God that's telling me to use?
Why would I trust a God, why would Abraham trust the God? Why would I trust the God who's telling me to abuse?
That sounds like...
No answers, right? Good for you. Any other big picture questions?
Is this the first time Abraham hearkened to the voice of God?
Is this the first time Abraham hearkened to the voice of God? Textually, I'm going to answer that one. No, it's not. This is Genesis 22. In Genesis 12, God calls to Abraham to do something, and he does. And between 12 and 22, all the stories about Abraham. So it's not the first time. So I'm going to answer that one. Big picture? I'll raise one that always troubles me and other people in my community is how, and maybe this is actually just a rephrasing of Andrew's question, how could God ask a man to sacrifice his son? And that's where I think... A difference between Judaism and Christianity and the fundamental theologies may be in play. All right. Amazing questions. Thank you for playing with me and doing that. Now we are going to read from the classical Midrashim. As I said, most of these, if you look on page 2 of the classical Midrashim, there's a list of sources and when they're from. So... it's all the way from the 5th century, although I think Genesis Rabbah is earlier than that. But from the 5th, as I've been saying a couple times, from the 5th to the 10th centuries are about when these are from. I have sort of excerpted some out here, but there are sources you can look at that actually quote them right from the source and cite the source. I've kind of turned it into a narrative, but it's pretty much straight from the sources. We'll read each one. Each paragraph is another different midrash using the term for just a passage. And we'll try to figure out what's going on in each one, at least briefly, because I want to try to get through a lot of text today. So on this first one, I'm going to invite us to read this as a dialogue, because that's what it's intended to be. So the italics are God, and the non-italics is... Abraham. So who would like to be God? Not in your life. Not in your life. Here's your chance. My dad always says when something he doesn't like, he said, if I were chief dictator, who would like to play, read God's part? Yes, thank you. Who would like to play Abraham? It doesn't have to be a male necessarily. Neither does God, frankly. Who would like to play Abraham? Thank you. Okay. So we got God and Abraham. Maybe stand up so we can hear you. Go for it.
Take now your son.
I have two sons. Which do you mean?
Your only son.
Each is an only son. One from Sarah and one from Hagar.
The one you love.
Master of the universe. Are there separate compartments in the heart for love? I love both of them.
Isaac.
Okay, what's going... Ooh, this has sticky. Good. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot something. Before we unpack this one, go back to the first page of the packet. A reminder from something I pointed out yesterday. When the rabbis wrote, the sages wrote these midrashim, they had some principles in mind, assumptions. Every word, every letter, every space, every verse in Torah is significant and relevant and intentional. Okay, that was their assumption. That doesn't mean every Jew believes that today, but that was the assumption of the people writing this. Second, every word, letter, space, and sentence has 70 possible meanings. 70 meaning many, many, multiple, not necessarily infinite, and not necessarily everything. It's not willy-nilly, anything goes, but it's multivocal. And thirdly, time is fluid, meaning in a midrash, Abraham could talk to King David, and that wouldn't be a problem, okay? Now, as we read these midrashim, we're going to ask ourselves the following questions. Maybe not in order, but in general. What was the question behind the answer? We have an answer here. It's like Jeopardy, right? If this is the answer, what was the question? How have they provided an answer to their own question? What is the underlying message or agenda that the answer is trying to teach? Because usually there is one. How does it change or enrich the text? How does it relate to our lives and real life? Do you like this midrash? How do you feel about it? And what other possible answers are there? Now, we could spend an hour or a day or a lifetime on any one of these midrashim and any one of these questions. We won't go through the list. Keep them in mind as we unpack each midrash, okay? If you need to tear it off and look at it, you can do that. Okay, so what's going on in this first midrash, this conversation between God and Abraham? Any idea what the textual question is that inspires it? And I will give you a hint. It's in verse 1, and we asked it up here. Somebody, I think it might have been Andrew. Or Walker. One of my students. Yay. What do you think this midrash is asking? What's the question?
Why does God repeat your son and your own son?
Right. So why does verse 2 say, take your son, your only son, the one you love, Isaac? Could have just said, take Isaac, right? So that's the question. It's a textual question. The sages said, wow, that's interesting. That's very repetitive. It must be repetitive for a reason. Here's how they answered it. What's going on? What's the underlying message? What does this teach us? How does it enrich the text?
There's a conversation between...
Good. So it's telling us that we only have one side of the conversation here. We hear what God is saying. The Midrash provides Abraham's answers each time, so God has to clarify because Abraham says this and this and this. What's the message? What is it? How does it enrich the text other than explaining why, oh, that's why it's like this, because it's really a conversation. It's like a telephone call on TV, right? Hello? Really? No kidding. We have to surmise what's happening on the other end.
Abraham left his other son, Ishmael.
Right. This midrash, yeah?
And Abraham also had to wrestle with which son to take.
Good. So it gives us a wrestling Abraham, as opposed to just an obedient Abraham. We presume Abraham is an obedient guy, This midrash, in a sense, rehabilitates Abraham the daddy, Abraham the father, as opposed to just Abraham the man of faith. Because Abraham the man of faith says, yay, God, I'm going to do what you tell me. But if you imagine a dad, some of you are dads, some of you are moms, some of you are not. We all had parents at one time or another. I would want my parent to protect me first and then go after God, maybe. This midrash suggests that the sages were troubled, I think, by the fact that Abraham was so quickly and easily willing to offer up his son. And so, or not, actually this one doesn't answer that, but it answers the question, he doesn't just love one of his sons. That's what it is. I'm jumping ahead of myself. Abraham is a father that loves both his sons. I think that's the underlying message behind this midrash. You might have others, absolutely. But he's, I think it's rehabilitating him as a father who loves both his sons. And it's giving an answer to why the textual, the nature of the text. Other thoughts about this one? And I'm giving more answers than I would rather draw them out, but I know we're so short on time and I want to cover a lot of text. Yes?
It makes you wonder why God chose Isaac and not Ishmael.
Makes you wonder, let's write it up, right? Why Isaac and not Ishmael? And that would be a very fertile question for creating midrash. And there is one midrash in here that doesn't exactly address that, but addresses the difference between Isaac and the two servants that come along. But that's the kind of question that would be really ripe for creating an answer. Let's read the next one. Someone want to read this one? It has a little... Actually, this has two parts, too. We need a narrator, an Abraham, and a Sarah. Want to stand up if you want to be narrator? Okay, Walker? Abraham? Come on. You only have to read. You don't have to make anything up. Thank you. And Sarah?
Me, Sarah.
Oh,
go ahead.
Find it out. Okay. So narrator reads what looks like a narrator part, Abraham reads the thoughts and words, Sarah reads her thoughts and words.
And Abraham thought,
how can I take Isaac away from his mother?
He went to Sarah and said,
when I was only 3 years old, I became aware of my maker. But this lad, growing up, has not yet been taught. Now there is a place far away where youngsters are taught by God.
Taught about God.
Taught about God. Let me take him there.
Sarah said,
take good care of him, for he is my only child. If he is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him water. Don't let him go on foot or sit in the sun or cross the road alone.
She spent the whole night weeping for him, and on the morning went out with them to see them off. And they said,
return to the tent.
And they all wept. And Sarah took hold of Isaac and embraced him and said,
who knows if I shall ever see you again?
Oh.
Okay. Thoughts?
Sarah knew something was up.
Sarah knew something up. So it addresses the question, what about Sarah? Other thoughts, reactions?
Continues the parental conversation.
Continues the parental conversation.
But she doesn't fight him in any way. As well, take good care of him.
Yep, she doesn't argue or try to stop it. She says, take good care of him.
Does that mean she trusts him?
Does that mean she trusts him? Good question.
And is he being honest about what he's
doing? Is he being honest? That goes to the question we had up there. Is he telling the truth, or is he just telling her something so she'll leave him alone? And I think, again, the sages are struggling with all these questions. I don't think I included it here, probably because I was trying to stay safe. But there is another midrash, and I don't know why I didn't include it, but there's another midrash that sits kind of right next to this one that says, why did Abraham get up early in the morning? Remember, Abraham got up early and saddled his ass. And one of the midrashim says he got up early so Sarah wouldn't see and notice. Because if she saw and noticed, she would have dropped dead from grief. And I didn't include that one. I'm not sure why. Why didn't Rabbi Adler include that? But it's another example of how two midrashim can answer the same question in two different ways. One says he talked to Sarah, he told her, and another says he left early so he wouldn't have to tell her. Let's look at the next one. Do we have parts in here? We do. So we've got a narrator again, Abraham and Isaac. Isaac. Great. Okay, let's go. On the third day of the journey.
On the third day of the journey, Abraham looked up and saw on the mountain, in the distance, a pillar of fire reaching up to heaven, and the glory of God in a heavy cloud. He said to Isaac,
"What do you see?"
And Isaac answered,
"A pillar of
fire." Oh, Isaac. Isaac answered.
I thought it was Abraham.
Oh, you're Abraham and you're Isaac. Okay, so so that should have been Abraham saying,
"So what do you see?"
And Isaac answered,
Abraham knew then that Isaac had been accepted as an offering. He asked Ishmael and
Eliezer,
and they saw nothing but the mountain. And he said to them,
"You stay here with the ass, and Isaac and I will go worship on the mountain, and we will return to you at evening."
For prophecy had come to Abraham, and he knew that they would both return from the mountain.
So this addresses a couple of questions we had. The sages had the same questions. What are the questions that we had, or that the sages had, that this is addressing?
How did he know that he's at the right mountain?
How did he know he's got the right mountain? How did he know which son?
And why was he willing to go through with taking his son up there?
There's one more that we had.
Why didn't the servants ask questions?
Yeah, what about the servants? First of all, who are the servants? It names them here.
Ishmael and
Eliezer. Ishmael. Where's Ishmael?
Is he the son? Yeah, so he brought him as a just in case.
Well, that's another midrash. Why did he bring them? Maybe he brought them as a just in case.
But the text at the beginning just said two lads.
Right. So in the biblical text, it just says two lads. And we might ask, who were the two lads and why did they come? This tells us who the two lads were. And you added a midrash that they were a just in case.
I have a question.
Yes.
So in verse 5, it says Abraham said to his servant lad. Is that a translation issue or is that like...
Yes, I think it is. Because it's, I believe that the Hebrew is just ne'arav. Verse 5?
Yeah.
Verse 5. Vayomer Abraham el ne'arav. Yes, it's just his young... A na'ar is a youth. So the two youths that he brought with him. So it's our translator that made them servant youths.
How did Abraham know they were going to both come back from the mountain?
So that's one of the questions we asked, and this answers that prophecy had come to him. Very good.
I was asking what prophecy told Abraham in that little bit. What prophecy did Abraham get that he knew he was coming back with Isaac?
Good. So that's a good question to ask of this midrash that we could answer by midrash. You could create a midrash that would tell us what you think that prophecy said. So if we were to say, if I were to invite you we're going to play a little bibliodrama here and create some modern midrash, if you're willing. Are you willing to play? Okay, so you are now Abraham.
All right,
Abraham. Nice to meet you. I'm Rabbi Adler. No, see, you're not Bob. You're Abe. Yeah. So Abe, I hear that some prophecy came to you when you were up on that mountain. That's fascinating. What was it? What did he say? Was it God? Was it who
it was
spoke to you?
A pillar of fire.
It was a pillar of fire.
Wow.
Wow. What did it say to you? Did it speak English?
No, it said nothing. All I was able to see was this cloud, and I interpreted that to say, Isaac's going to be okay.
Oh, how did you know?
I don't know that.
Ah, okay. So maybe, thank you. Give my hand.
Yeah.
So for Bob, midrashically, so we just learned something about you. Midrashically, Abraham didn't really know what that prophecy was. If we had more time and if this was a bibliodrama section, but I want to get through this text, I might ask someone else in the room to be Abraham and tell us, okay, I take it back. Let's do it. Anyone else want to be Abraham and have a different answer, just really quickly? Anyone have a sense that Abraham had a different answer? Thank you. Hello, Abraham. Rabbi Adler.
Come ahead. I won't shake your hand. Sorry. Hi.
So I hear you had a prophecy came to you.
It came to me through my son, who saw the pillar of God on the mountain, and I knew then that my son was with God.
Oh.
And that we were both being tested.
Interesting. Thank you. So these are two different midrashim in response to a midrash. Call them a meta-midrash, I don't know. But you're seeing the midrashic process at work of reading a text. You got a message for me?
Yes.
Can you give it to Nancy? Give the message to Nancy. secret messages. Good. So you're learning about the process of midrash. You're applying the midrashic process to a midrashic text, which you can apply to any text. Thank you both. Let's move on. While they were walking, we've got it again. Abraham and Isaac talking. You can see that often the midrash gets into the conversation. Do we have some volunteers again? Isaac and Abraham we need here.
Isaac.
Okay. Abraham?
I'll be.
Thank you. I'll be the narrator. Unless we have a narrator. So anyone want to be the narrator? Walker, please.
While they were walking along, Isaac said,
"Here are the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the offering?"
Abraham answered,
"God has chosen you for the offering instead of a lamb."
And Isaac said,
"I will do all that God asks with joy. Blessed is the Lord who has this day chosen me to be a burnt offering before him."
And Abraham rejoiced at his son's words.
What's going on here? What are the questions?
Complete fantasy.
Lunacy, is that what I heard?
A complete fantasy.
Fantasy. What's the question, and how's the response, and how's it make you feel?
How was this experience for Isaac?
How was this experience for Isaac, yeah. Was he into it? Why didn't he fight back? Why didn't he fight back, according to this?
He wanted to.
Right. He wanted it. So what does that say about the sages who are interpreting the text and asking the question? So it teaches us also, I said yesterday, text, context, intersection. This midrash teaches us something about the text itself, but it also teaches us something about the sages who were struggling with the text. It suggests to me that they were struggling with where's Isaac, and I think they felt Isaac probably didn't want this. But we're going to go overboard the other way and say Isaac was faithful too. He wanted this. He was in on it. That takes a stretch of the imagination, at least to me. But as a Christian, you might read it differently, knowing that Jesus was sacrificed. But as a Jew, I just can't see Isaac being in on it, but the sages want me to see that.
But Abraham was in on it.
Abraham
seems to be scooting around the question. God has chosen you for the offering instead of lamb, not I.
Right. So what is that?
So
how do you
mean beyond the realm of both of us? Neither one of us has a choice here.
It's bigger than both of us.
Yeah.
Good. And that would make me wonder the question we had before, is he telling the truth or lying? But textually, God did ask him to do this, so. Good.
Doesn't it also imply that that Isaac is that somebody offering themselves, somebody offering themselves as a sacrifice is equated with blessing?
Good. It suggests that somebody offering themselves is equated with blessing. That's a good thing, right? Yeah. It does suggest that, yes. And it also, so that addresses your question, is blessing require sacrifice? And then you raised something else for me, but it fleeted right through. So,
Also the chosenness, that's another one.
Right.
Well, and Abraham rejoiced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank good he wants this. Now it's not on me. Mm-hmm. That's what pleaded through my mind. Mm-hmm. It's not on Abraham anymore because Isaac wanted it. Which is a really scary parallel to questions of rape and date rape and things. To say, well, she wanted it. He wanted it. So that's a scary parallel. It just, and some, I think, biblical texts that we read can be dangerous parallels if we bring them forward without really thinking it through.
I'm wondering, in this paragraph, how much wine did they take along on the trip?
I'm wondering, so that, how much wine did they take along on the trip brings me to this morning's text of Acts 2, was it, that David presented, where some people said, oh, they just drank so much wine. They're not really, it's not really real. All right, let's have Abraham and Isaac once again. Actually, we really just need Isaac and the narrator. Someone want to be Isaac here? You gotta really want it here if you want to be Isaac. Andrew, you going to be Isaac?
Yep.
Okay, Walker, give us the narrator again.
Abraham and Isaac built the altar together, and Abraham bound Isaac. Isaac said, bind my hands and feet securely, for I am a young man, 37 years old, and you are an old man. Mm-hmm. When I see the knife in your hand, I may begin to tremble at the sight and resist, for the urge to live is strong. Or I may cause myself some blemish and make myself unfit for the offering. So, Father, make haste, delay not. Slaughter me, then burn me into fine ashes. Gather the ashes and bring them to Sarah, my mother. She may keep them in her tent and always remember her son Isaac.
And then Isaac continued,
what will you tell my mother when she asks what happened? And how will you both survive in your old age?
And Abraham answered,
we need an Abraham.
We will survive you by a few days only. He who was our comfort before you were born will comfort us now and forever.
And I'm going to invite us to read the next one because it has the same theological premise a little bit. Yeah. God speaking here and the angel, Michael. So this answers who are the angels. It's Michael and Gabriel. But anyone want to be God and the angel? And then we'll think about both of these together.
I'll be God.
Thank you. Anyone want to be the angel? Okay. Good. Go ahead. God and the... Oh, narrator, Walker, we're just going to make you our permanent narrator.
God and the angels watched from heaven and saw how the hearts of the two were one. Then God spoke to the angel Michael.
Why are you just standing there? Stop him.
And Michael said,
Abraham, Abraham, lay not your hand on the lad, neither do anything to him.
Abraham answered,
oh, do we have an Abraham? We need an Abraham.
God commanded me to slaughter Isaac, and you tell me not to? What am I supposed to do?
Then Abraham heard the blessing.
Because you have done this thing.
And Abraham left off from Isaac and untied his bonds.
Okay, so these two midrashim together. Isaac saying, tie me up good, because we don't want to slip and mess this up. And Abraham arguing with the angel. The angel tries, first of all, God tells the angel to stop him. The angel tries to stop him, and Abraham says, what the heck? You tell me to do this. You tell me not to do this. What am I supposed to do? So what's going on here for the sages who are writing this? How does it answer questions? How does it make, how do you respond to this?
I'm curious about his age. 37 is not young.
So it, yeah. We always think of Isaac as a little boy, right?
Yeah.
But if you do the math in terms of the generations and the time that has passed and the events that have happened, if you do the biblical math, as it were, Luther, he's 37.
And how does he
But stand? Time is fluid, so we could still think of him as a lad, if we, as a boy, if we want. But if we do the math, he's 37, which changes the thing entirely, doesn't it?
How does he stay unblemished after 37 years? You know, because the sacrifice of unblemished.
Very good. How would he stay unblemished after 37 years?
Beauty lotion.
Right. Mama's boy.
Why does the paragraph describe him as not yet knowing about God, and Abraham's saying, now there's a place far away where youngsters are taught about God, let me take him there. Sarah, like, how does that...
Don't let him cross the street by himself.
Yeah, so, so that is... Yeah, so that is actually using the context of the sage writing the Midrash. They would send their children, their boys, to yeshiva, to school, to learn about God and Torah. So the context of the writer of the Midrash is showing here, and they're inserting their context into the biblical context. So I'm going to send, and so even in the language in the Hebrew, it's, I'm going to send him to yeshiva, and the reader would understand what that means.
You know, the other thing is that the first two Midrash that we read seemed very real, like they were real conversations that I could imagine people having. And these last three have just kind of been over the top.
And when I think when a Midrash is over the top, the more over the top the Midrash is, and in the packet on from yesterday about the 10 plagues, some of those go way over the top. To me, the more over the top it is indicates a deeper struggle on the part of the person writing it. Right. Thou doth protest too much. Right. You know? So the more they feel like Isaac must have really hated this, they'll write, Isaac really loved this, to kind of counteract that, I think, angst inside is reflected here when they say, he really want, you know, tie me up better, I really want to be the sacrifice. I think the rabbis, I think, this is me now, we're struggling with, how could Isaac have really wanted? Well, he must have. And to teach us that perspective, because they might fear that the readers of the text will be thinking, Isaac couldn't have wanted this, so they're going to teach us by writing this Midrash that Isaac actually wanted it. That make sense?
Yeah, I was also wondering if they, in the context of when it was written, if there was a taboo for them to really put it out there that, no, Isaac didn't want to do this, and so they had to say this.
Well, they were the leaders. They were creating, if there was a taboo, they created it themselves. So these are coming out of the leaders of the Jewish people. Although sometimes we have to read in from the context, they are sometimes doing a polemics or apologetics to the ruling powers, which is Rome at one time, others at other times. So some of these have hidden apologetic or polemic in them about Christianity and about Rome. I'm going to let you read the next one on your own because it's long. And quickly, the last one on page 2. After the offering on Mount Moriah, Abraham returned to Beersheba, the scene of so many of his joys. Isaac was carried to paradise by angels, and he sojourned there for 3 years.
Wow.
What? But that answers the question, when Abraham goes to Beersheba, what happened to Isaac? Where's Isaac? This answers... He went to paradise. Psychologically, a psychological modern midrash argues that, in fact, Isaac was emotionally slaughtered by Abraham on that mountain.
Post-traumatic stress.
And exactly. And it's interesting to note, and here's where you can use later texts to create midrash on earlier texts. Isaac never speaks again in the biblical text. So the relationship was shattered. I think actually it's in one of my modern midrashim. You can look at a later text. Where's Isaac going forward? He exists. He gets married, whatnot. But he doesn't speak. Other people are speaking for him. Okay, I want to show you some examples of modern midrash now. I know we just have a couple minutes, so we'll read fast. So the first one is by Humbly Yours, Me. This is a midrash I wrote because I'm not comfortable with this whole text. Before giving Abraham his blessing, and so the blessing, I'm talking about the blessing at the end, saying, because you did this thing, because you feared me, I will give you this, that, and the other thing. Before giving Abraham his blessing, God wept. Tears of disappointment.